right. I haven't done one of these in a little while. In fact, the last Ramble episode I did was with the fantastic Mr. Biffo. And if you haven't listened to that one, go and listen to my retro ramble, which was a couple of weeks ago. Well, I thought I'm going to have a little walk, and I've just done a video for TikTok. Yes, I know, I'm in the modern generation, yeah? In it, wicked, bruv, I'm awesome. Anyway, I came to St Albans to see what the Christmas lights were like, and much to my surprise, who am I kidding? It wasn't a surprise. The Christmas lights, yet again, are shit. They are absolutely dreadful. So yeah, go and watch that video. I'll stick the link in the metadata and you can just see how bad they actually are. But today I'm going to ramble and I'm going to talk about a random year that Alexa chose for me. Sorry if that's just set your Alexa off at home. I asked it, Alexa, can you give me a random number between 1984 and 2010? And it gave me 1998. So I'm going to talk about 1998, and as normal, I'm going to talk about gaming, I'm going to talk about TV, film, and music. Seeing the last retro ramble was about gaming, let's actually crack on with gaming, shall we? And there was a lot to choose from this year. First of all, there was Unreal, not Unreal Tournament, but Unreal, the original first-person shooter that had the name of Unreal. And that blew my mind, but I've not chosen that, even though I have very fond memories of playing it with my best mate, Eddie. It just, as much as I enjoyed it, there were better games that I would rather talk about. I could have spoken about Resident Evil 2, which again, fantastic game. Never played through all of it. Scared the living shit out of me with things jumping through windows, especially in that first part of the game when the liquor jumps at you through the mirrored window in the police station. I'm not going to play that though. I could talk about Metal Gear Solid. However, as good a game as Metal Gear Solid is, I've never played it, so I'm not going to talk about that one either. Instead, and because of the last retro ramble, I'm going to talk about Half-Life, because Half-Life really changed how I looked at games, really, and how I looked at first-person shooters. And the first time I came across Half-Life was with a PC gamer demo disc. And now, it depends on how old you are, really, and what sort of generation, what sort of gamer you were. But I got a lot of my first gaming experiences, especially with modern gaming, through demo discs. Whether that was the PlayStation Official Magazine disc, which allowed us to play Grand Theft Auto for the first time, or whether it was the PC Gamer discs, which eventually became the PC Gamer DVDs. And you know what, the PC Gamer demo discs, I had a lot of fun with. There was a fantastic disc they did that was full of Half-Life mods. And this was obviously after Half-Life had come out. And it had USS Darkstar, which was an absolutely fantastic modification for the game. It had a, oh, I can't think of its name now. It had a Night of the Living Dead one as well, which was just, I think that had two episodes as well, which was a full-on zombie Half-Life game. But anyway, so PC Gamer released their demo disc with Half-Life 1 on it. And I took it home, plugged it into my brother's PC, and it was basically, if I remember rightly, a part of the hazard perception course, plus a little bit extra added into it. And I remember saying to myself, as we played the demo, I don't think much about this. And doesn't the fire effects look weird? Because you fired the rocket launcher. And for some reason, in my head, as a kid always does, I looked at the fire and the explosion animation and thought, oh, that's a bit crap, isn't it? It could be so much better. Why is it not 3D? Why is it not beautifully animated? Of course, that was me putting kind of graphics over substance of game. Now, Half-Life 1 then came out because my oldest brother was incredibly impressed with the demo. So he went and bought it, the original big orange box version. He installed it and I became addicted. It was probably the first big box PC game that I'd ever played that had, or a first person shooter, I should say, that had a monumental kind of cinematic storyline going on. I mean, I'd played Doom on the PlayStation and played it on the PC, And I love those games. And I know the storyline is fairly basic for Doom, but it is just a very basic story that plays out at the beginning, and that's it. Whereas Half-Life, you were playing a movie. That was just what Half-Life gave you. It gave you scene-by-scene action, and it was just bloody brilliant. The game itself, the mechanics were good, the weapons were good, everything felt absolutely fantastic. Everything felt natural. Everything felt like it just worked and it fit in place. There were no bad guys in it that were overpowered. There were no really stupidly easy parts, the puzzle parts of the game. Everything about it just worked amazingly. And obviously, it just keeps getting better and better. And obviously, there's been the remake, Black Mesa, which I must play at some point, which basically gives you Half-Life 1 in modern graphics. And if you listen to the podcast, you'll know how happy I was hearing that Tomb Raider 1 and 2 were staying the original game, just being made to look pretty. So I must get around to playing Half-Life Black Mesa at some point. But it's gone through so many iterations. It's gone through the Orange Box, Game of the Year. I mean, oh, what an absolute legend of a game. And I just had to pick it to talk about. The whole idea of Gordon Freeman was excellent. And another thing it spun off was a online comic series called Concerned. And if you hadn't come across it, the first time I read it, nearly pissed myself with laughter. And it shouldn't have been as funny as it was, but it was, and it was using the graphics from Half-Life, and the character they'd created was Gordon Froman. And people mistake him for Gordon Freeman, ha ha ha. But the things that they set up, and how he follows the story through. And in fact, I've got it wrong. It was Half-Life 2 they did this for, not Half-Life. But it still spawned from the original Half-Life, because without Half-Life, you wouldn't have had Half-Life 2. It was just incredibly funny. Now, going back to the original Half-Life, we didn't play much multiplayer of that, which was strange, because this is peak era for LAN parties for us. But what we did play a lot of multiplayer was Rocket Crowbar. So Rocket Crowbar was a mod for the original Half-Life, and it did exactly that. Your weapon of choice was a crowbar with a rocket attached to it, and you ran around hitting things and it blew up. If you right-clicked, I think it fired the rocket. Then you also had other weird and wonderful weapons, like a shotgun that fires exploding scientists, or the black hole grenade, which you threw and it would create a massive black hole, sucking any movable object, including players and weapons, into the vortex, eventually destroying them. And I guess really the other thing that we can't really neglect to talk about is without Half-Life, we wouldn't have had Counter-Strike, which started off as a mod for the original game before being made into its own dedicated game. So Half-Life definitely deserves to be my game to talk about for 1998. Now I'm just trying to unlock my phone here, and it's covered in water because it's pissing down with rain. So let me see if I can actually get into it so we find out what we're talking about next. So we've just done gaming. Let's talk about television, because this was an incredibly hard one to talk about, because 1998 turned out to be a bloody good year for TV in England. Now I grew up in a household that didn't have Sky or Virgin, or sorry, NTL as it would have been back then. Instead, we had terrestrial TV. And by 98, I had, it must have been about 98 or 99, I gave up with the portable aerial and I climbed into the roof space, which was a loft hatch in my room. I bought a TV aerial from Wilkinson's. I strapped it to that roof space with duct tape and then ran a cable down to the TV to get better signal. That's just what you did to get good signal. But that was a couple of years later than 98, actually, because my brother had gone to university and I'd taken over his room. We are in 98, which means I was in the smallest room of the house. My first TV was still the TV I had then, which was a little black and white portable set that my aunt and uncle had given me. And to give you an idea of its age, other than the fact that it was monochrome, it had one of those dials that you had to turn to choose the channel. So it was old. Take that as that's what it was. But I still loved it because it gave me the opportunity to watch TV in my room on a slightly bigger screen than my pocket TV, which I'll talk about later. Anyway, TV shows in 1998. What could I have spoken about? I could have spoken about airlines, which went on for multiple seasons. It was about Britannia Airlines and eventually became about EasyJet. And weirdly, they've just published a load of the, well, someone has published a load of the episodes onto YouTube. And I've sat and watched them all, and they're bloody brilliant. And I tell you what, you would not get away with treating people the way a lot of them treat the customers now. I mean, Jane was an absolute monster to be reckoned with. And although she was right most of the time, she was absolutely brutal to people. But anyway, we're not talking about airline. And we're not going to talk about Scrap Heap Challenge, the game show that made everyone think I could go on that show without realising that you'd need to know A, mechanics, B, how to weld, and C, be an adult who could do anything with their hands. Because Scrap Heap Challenge was a brilliant show, but you really did need to be technical. And you could see when a team wasn't technical, how badly they would fail at whatever the task was. So yeah, I'm not going to talk about Scrap Heap Challenge, no matter how much I wanted to be on that show. Now, and this is where it gets difficult. I wanted to really talk about Rex the Run. It was an Aardman animation, and it was part of, I think, is it Edgemont as well? Edgemont Media, maybe. And it was a claymation show about four dogs, Rex, Wendy, Bad Bob, and Vince. And it was just, it was on BBC Two. They were short episodes. They were weird. They were wonderful. And it was just genuinely incredibly funny. But another show aired for the first time in Channel 4, on Channel 4, I should say, in 1998, and that was South Park. And how can I not choose South Park, the show that still goes to this day and has managed to remain strong compared to The Simpsons, which, okay, they've got at least 10 years on South Park, but Simpsons has not been funny for a long, long time. Whereas South Park, whatever you think about Trey and Matt, they write very quick, well, very quick-witted, very on the point, very on the nose comedy, and they always, always get to the root of whatever is going on in the world right now. Look at when Trump first became president. We had an entire series, or two series, dedicated to Mr. Garrison being president. And yes, he was Trump. We've had an entire series where we have a PC called PC Principal, who basically will not allow anything unwoke to happen in the school. Yet, we have an entire series, and to be fair, I will say this is the series that it fell down, based purely on Tegrity Farms, which is Randy Marsh selling weed. And okay, it's a bit of a low point for the show, because honestly, it's not the best they've ever done, but it was still funny. And everything from early South Park to the new South Park, you can find the original core humour to it still. Now, I am very, very fond of the original South Parks. The first few series in particular, where every episode was different. It was just the boys and a different story every time. But I have grown to appreciate them changing the narrative to season-long stories, because it allowed the show to evolve past where they were. And as much as I would still find individual episodes funny, I think having a long-running storyline in the background can also be just as funny. And they seem to have done it absolutely brilliantly with South Park. Obviously, South Park then spun off lots and lots of things. We'll talk about that in music in a moment, funny enough, because we had the South Park Chef Aid album. We had countless singles, including Chef's Hot Chocolate Salty Balls. We had the Mr. Hankey Christmas album, which is still one of the best Christmas albums you can get. So yeah, South Park, bloody brilliant. And if you haven't played the modern games, Stick of Truth and Snow Day, and I've forgotten what the other one was, go and play them. They're normally really cheap at the moment, and it is just like you are playing an episode. So, South Park wins the TV for 1998. Now, I've got to get back into my phone while it's wet. It's not recognising my face because I'm wearing a hat. Oh, good God, how are we doing? Right, that was TV. Let's talk about film. Film, you know what? I remember 1998 in film quite well when I look at the list of films that were out. None of them really made me go, ooh, wow. So, film I'm going to bring up first of all was Hard Rain, and that features Christian Slater. It's not a film I saw when it came out. I wasn't old enough. Well, was I old enough? No, I wasn't old enough to see it when it came out, I don't think. And it's a pretty good film. It's Morgan Freeman, Christian Slater. A town gets flooded, I think the dam fails, and a whole load of robberies go on by Morgan Freeman to go and steal lots and lots of money from a bank. Christian Slater in the same old sort of role he always ends up playing, whether it's, what's the one with John Travolta, where he's stolen a nuclear bomb, but you get what I mean. Christian Slater always seems to play the same role. Anyway, Hard Rain, good film, not what I'm going to talk about. Spice World, weirdly, and having grown up a little bit, is also a fairly good film, if you don't mind a little bit of satirical, weird Spice Girl stuff. Lots of very famous faces in it. Meatloaf is the tour bus driver. But a lot of fun, but very, very weird that we watched it on VHS on our coach ride to the battlefield trips in France when I was doing GCSEs. Why they chose to show that to an entire bus full of 15 and 16 year olds, I don't know. But there you go, that's what they did. Saving Private Ryan also came out in 1998. They could have shown that on VHS. They could have showed us Blackadder Goes Forth. But no, they didn't. Saving Private Ryan, saw it in the cinema, was a little bit above my head at that age. I was still more about playing games, having fun with my friends. I didn't really want to see anything serious. My cousin did, so we went and watched it. You know what? An amazing film, and watching it back now, it's still as amazing, especially when you have more of an understanding about World War II and everything like that. The Truman Show. Now, this is top-notch film, and it is just, it's one of Jim Carrey's best roles that he's ever done, and I don't think it's one of the films he'll ever really top. Oh, there's so much to say about The Truman Show, but again, I don't have fond memories of it because I didn't watch it until much later. So the film I'm going to talk about isn't one that I would say I've got the greatest of fondness for, although I do enjoy the film, and that's Armageddon. And I think the reason I enjoy it more so in my head is because of the memories related to it. Now, I won, and I told you I was going to come back to this, didn't I? I won a pocket TV, a Casio pocket TV. I think it was a TV 480, if you want to be geeky and look it up. And that came from the Beano, and I won that in a Christmas card competition. It's at 4 AA batteries. It had, I think it was about a 2-inch rectangular screen, and it would tune into standard terrestrial channels. And that was amazing, because before I had the little black and white TV, that was my only way of watching anything in my room when I shouldn't have been. And that little TV came with me everywhere. And one of the things that we used to have to do as a kid at my parents' shop on a weekend, was we'd go on a Saturday and one of us would go and sit in the yard, which was a little part of the shop that was to the side of the shop. It used to be an entrance all the way through to the garden, and instead we had it converted into a showroom. And what one of us would do on a Saturday would we'd sit out there with the radiator, in the winter that is, and we'd just read books, we'd read comics, and we'd sit out there, and if people came in and bought something, they could come in, give us the money, and off they went. That was our little job. We got a little bit of pocket money for it, and it made the day pass a little bit, to be honest, because it was a bit of a boring day sitting there at the shop not having anything to do, especially when you weren't old enough to go around town on your own. Now, how does this all relate to Armageddon? Well, in 1998, I had my little pocket TV. I was sat out in the yard, so of course, I was watching TV on it. And I remember sitting there watching the, I think it was ITV. ITV on a Saturday used to do a film TV show. And they did a whole segment on this upcoming film called Armageddon. And it showed the making of some of it. And it showed the making of the initial scene where the first few meteorites hit Earth, and we see the taxi thrown up in the air, the man cut in half, and the dog hanging down, and all of that. And it showed the making of it, and then it talked to a couple of the actors in it, and it showed off the film, and it stuck in my mind, and I thought, wow, this is what cinema is going to become. This is what cinema is. I can't believe that we're finally getting films that look real. This is absolutely amazing. And I was desperate to go and see it, so I went and saw it, and yeah, I enjoyed it. And as much as I don't watch it regularly, when I do watch it, I get a lot of pleasure out of watching it. I get a lot of pleasure watching Steve Buscemi riding a nuclear bomb with what's-his-face saying, "Get off the nuclear weapon." It's a fun film that then obviously, just like all the disaster films, when we had Armageddon, later came out Deep Impact, which, I'm sorry, but that is a horribly depressing film, Deep Impact, and it is not a mark on Armageddon. And then we had, I think it was Volcano, and then we got, instead of Volcano, we got The Core, which again is a horribly depressing film. Although I've got to say, as much as I badmouth it, I do have a little bit of cheesy love for it. It is a very cheesy, enjoyable film. But Armageddon, yeah, I enjoyed it. That's all you need to know. So we're going to come on to the final thing. And I'm sorry, I'm sniffing a lot because I realised I am absolutely drenched. It's absolutely peeing down now. Why I choose to do these walks when it's raining, I don't know. But here we go. Music. And why did music link to South Park? Well, because in 1998, we had Chocolate Saucy Balls released by Chef on single. And my friend Luke, who was Eddie's brother, who's one of my best mates now, had it on single, and we played it non-stop. Oh my God, the bloody path is flooded. Oh dear. Oh God, how am I gonna... This is probably a bad idea. Oh well, anyway, carrying on. So yeah, we had Chocolate Saucy Balls, great song, not gonna talk about it. Horny 98, why am I talking about that one? Because it was on the Chef Aid album. And it was an odd song on that album because it wasn't just Horny 98. It's Matt and Trey Parker having a discussion about why the song shouldn't be included on the album. So I'm not gonna talk about that. Now, the next one I played a huge amount when I had a mini disc player. God, I miss that mini disc player. But on that mini disc player, I had Faith by Limp Bizkit. A brilliant song, really, really, well, it's not a brilliant song. Growing up, I know it's not a brilliant song, but me back then thought it was a brilliant song and I listened to it non-stop. I also had Green Day, Good Riddance, Time of Your Life. And again, oh, I could talk about that, but I talked about that in the last ramble about 94, when I talked about ER, because in 98, or 99 I should say, ER, Jeannie sings it at the death of a patient, and it's very, very moving. And that's actually when I discovered that song. So what song am I going to talk about? It's a ridiculous song, and I'm only talking about it because I can almost remember step for step the day that I bought it. So the song of 1998, and the last thing I'm going to talk about, thank God I'm sure most of you were saying, Kung Fu Fighting by Carl Douglas and Bus Stop. Oh boy, what a song. Right, I'm going to put my phone in my pocket before it gets even wetter. So Kung Fu Fighting was a song from, I want to say the 60s or 70s, and it was by Carl Douglas. Then in 98, we got a semi-dance modern version of it featuring Carl Douglas doing the main lines to it. And obviously that was done by Bus Stop. Now, it's not a great song. It's bloody awful. But I remember buying the CD from Woolworths. I took my little bit of pocket money. I went up that morning, went all the way up to Woolworths, found it on the singles chart, picked it up, and I went and bought it. And I think that would have been back in the day of 99p singles. I took it back to the shop, realised my aunt didn't have a CD player, so I then spent the rest of the day waiting. Waiting and waiting and waiting before I could go home and play it. So I waited. And it got to home time, it was the summer, so my dad had gone to play cricket. So it was just me and my mum at the shop. So we trekked up George Street, and at the top of George Street, they just opened a fish and chip place, and it was horrible. We both went in there, we both had I had a sausage and batter and chips, actually, and the chips weren't very nice, the sausage and batter wasn't very nice. Both of us ate about half of it and went, I give up, let's go home. And we went and caught the 3-2-1, which back in those days only cost me 55p to get home. Welcome to bus fares of the 90s. And we got on the bus and we went home. I ran into my front, into my, where did I go into? Because we did have to see, oh, it must have been my bedroom. I went up to my bedroom. I got my brilliant Panasonic Ghetto Blast, which I'd got a birthday previously. And I put the CD in and I listened to that song on repeat, ad nauseum, probably most of that night. And then it got even more exciting when I realized that the CD cover said bonus video. So ran downstairs, turned on my brother's computer, which was an old beige Dell Tower, turned it on, Windows 95 booted up. On the desktop, we had the copy of the Weezer Buddy Holly video because that was quite enjoyable to play back in the time. Stuck the CD in and yeah, we enjoyed the terrible, terrible, low bitrate, low resolution video of Bus Stop and Carl Douglas doing kung fu fighting. Can I remember that video? No, I can't, which shows how crap it must have been. It wasn't the best song. I've chosen it purely because of the memory. Anyway, I have spoken for way too long. I need to go home. I need to copy these files onto my computer before I lose them. I need to edit my TikTok video and upload that. So join us in a week's time for the main variety show where we are taste testing Christmas treats so you know which ones to buy and which ones to avoid. Take it easy and see you soon. Goodbye.
This was a Studio Channel 84 network show. To find more, head over to channel84.co.uk now.